step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 886. My name, as it is on sunny, hot Wednesdays, is Lisa Sheps. I'm your host, and I'm joined by guest co-host extraordinaire, Pam Fletcher Friday.
Woo! Okay, I'm Pam Fletcher Friday. I am your favorite person to measure your insane.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. Do not go away.
The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
Will you join in our crusade?
It is Wednesday, July 22nd, 2026. On the show today, we have the Jigglewatts and their burlesque review. Later on, we'll be talking to Devin Finn. We're going to talk everything Booth Brothers. And then very much later, we're going to talk to Alex Garza and his show, I Know. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Broadway, which is also in New York, and other places. Don't go away. Do you hear the people singing the song of angry men?
Yes.
Pam Fletcher Friday.
Hey!
Welcome to the show.
Hey, I've been around a lot of angry men.
Who hasn't? but you're not. You're in a very gender-friendly room right now.
I am.
And we'll say more about that in a second. But tell me, I didn't realize you had never been on the show as a guest, and now here you are co-hosting.
I know, I'm so excited.
Not even. Tell people who the heck are you?
Oh.
As it pertains to theater.
Okay. I taught middle school theater for over 20 years.
Over 20 years. But you have also designed costumes.
Well, for over 40 years.
For over 40 years, and that's not bad for someone who's 35 years old.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
And I have a show opening, and it's a great time to be a costumer in Austin, Texas.
That's underground.
Summer underground
at the Vortex, which we had them on the show
last week, two weeks ago,
I think.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, it's happy to have you. Let me introduce the folks that are joining us, that are here in the studio audience with us. I need my cheat sheet because I can't remember anything. We have Alexander the Great. Hey, Alexander.
Hello. I'm so happy to be here.
Do you go by Alexander? Or do you go by Great? Or the?
You know, let's keep it formal. Alexander's great. Okay. Thank you.
ATG works. It works for AOC. Ruby Lamb.
Hey. Hello, I'm one of two Rubies.
You are.
I am.
That was what the hesitation was about. I was going, uh-oh. And then we have Ruby Jewel.
Hello. And incidentally, the name Ruby is the most popular burlesque name.
I did not know that.
There were studies done.
Oh, okay. I have a ring with rubies in it. So does that count?
Absolutely.
I'm burlesque. and something blue.
Hi.
Hey. I just watched it. What show was that? Oh, it was the show we were just talking about, I think, in the lobby.
The Great.
Not The Great, but the...
Margot's Got Money Troubles?
Yeah, there was somebody got married in that, right? Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And she did the whole Something Borrowed. That was a sweet part of that series.
Aw, cute.
Anyway. Michelle Pfeiffer.
Thank you, yes. Michelle Pfeiffer. Oh, right, was getting married. That was a problematic character. Okay, so did y'all recognize that song that we played coming in?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
It's from Les Mis, which I thought was interesting. There's a very interesting article in the New York Times about Les Mis, which made me want to talk about it today. And just talking about how ubiquitous it is and how they're doing so many concert versions of it right now. And I don't know if anybody saw the... I think it was the 25th anniversary concert version with Nick Jonas and others.
Ooh. On PBS?
On PBS. Ooh. And it was done in an outdoor amphitheater. And it was big and beautiful. And the thing's wonderful about Les Mis is how big it is. in a huge orchestra. Oh, you know what? I am so sorry. I did not introduce Lilith, the intern. Lilith is unable to speak, but they can. They're sort of doing an un. There it is. There's a high five. It's a wave, which doesn't really work on radio. Anyway, Les Mis is doing everything. It's coming back to the Radio City Music Hall. They're calling it Les Miserables, the Arena Concert Spectacular.
Ooh. How do folks feel about roller skating in it?
I hope so too. Yeah. And you know what they should do? They should do the Nutcracker,
the Mother Ginger, and have all the toy soldiers.
Yes, thank you. You didn't see. Those of you watching on the webcam saw me do. I was doing the robot, and she got toy soldiers out. I wasn't doing the robot, but that's sort of what it looked like. But how do we like Les Mis?
I love it.
Yeah, it's extremely relevant.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, there was a revival done in Dallas that they did it in current. They changed the time frame to be current, and and they dealt with Iran and all sorts of not.
Wow.
Sorry, when I said Iran, I meant Iraq. The letter off. anyway, so there was this just very long article and they were talking about why it's so popular. It's a huge show with a runtime of over 3 hours, which, as you know, Americans can't do that anymore. Pam and I went to see a play the other day that was just over an hour, and that was just
too long.
She thought it was too long. She does not like the play. We're not gonna name what it is.
Okay.
But you have a relative that's in it.
I do.
Okay. Well,
I do.
That's
it. And the acting in the show, directing, great. Script.
There you go. But you know what? It's a new playwright. Hasn't been around very long. Sam Shepard.
What a hack.
What a hack. He's going to go nowhere.
I can get it down to 20 minutes.
Anyway, so Les Mis started off in France. Did you know that? That's where the show started. Mm-hmm. Alexander is nodding their head. Yes?
Yes.
You knew that?
I believe I did, yeah.
You know what? I question that. Okay, I didn't. And it was a concept album in 1980 by... Hélène Boubil and Claude Michel Schoenberg. Schoenberg. It's got the umlauts over the, I don't know. Anyway, it's had three different Broadway productions since 1987. And it's coming back home to France.
Ooh.
They've got a French version that had a showing in 2024. And it's returning to the Théâtre des Chalets in Paris coming up very, very soon. It's got a very intricate plot. Yeah. It's really lots of twists and turns. So here's a quiz. Javert. What do y'all think?
Is that the Russell Crowe character from the movie?
That is.
Because I'm picturing that, Russell Crowe. Is that right?
That awful actor Russell Crowe, yes. I liked the movie, by the way, with the exception of Russell Crowe.
I did too. I liked it. Yeah. Same sentiment.
I'm an Anne Hathaway fan.
Oh, she's so good in it. Yeah. So good.
But speaking of Anne Hathaway, we're going to take a little side tangent here. I saw Anne Juliet last week. Has anybody seen Anne Juliet?
No.
No, just me? Nodding does not work on the radio, Pam Fletcher Friday.
Tech rehearsal. I'm a working designer.
Yeah, so but you nodded. That to me that says yes, you saw
it. I feel like I did because I had people that described everything and which songs were which.
So Anne Juliet is a jukebox musical, and it makes the supposition that Juliet decides when she wakes up and finds Romeo has killed himself, I'm not going to do that. And she lives.
I want to see it immediately.
Which is all I knew about it. And it's all 90s music, which I think people, if they know the music, will really love it. I don't. I did not. I do nothing about any of the music. Actually, the only... If it was in Pitch Perfect, if it was in the Pitch Perfect movies, I knew it. And there were like three or four of them from the Pitch Perfect movies.
Wow.
Anyway, but it's really not about Juliet. It's more about Anne Hathaway.
Oh.
Who is Anne Hathaway is the wife of William Shakespeare.
Oh, Anne
Anne Hathaway.
See, I did that on purpose because they make a joke of that. They actually at one point said, there could never be another Anne Hathaway.
That's pretty brilliant.
Yeah. Anyway, but that's what really the show is about, the empowerment of Anne Hathaway, mm-hmm. who was mad that she was not able to help Shakespeare write this play because this is what she would have done, and then they play it out. Anyway. Boy, how did we get down that rabbit hole? But what they found interesting in this article, which was written by Michael Paulson, I think, that everybody has a different take because of so many different storylines. Everybody comes away with something different from Les Mis. Let's see, what else do I want to talk about? Oh, but here it is. Quiz. I told you there'd be a test. Is it about the French Revolution?
No.
You said no right away.
I know that it's not.
What's it about then?
It's about an uprising like a couple years after the French Revolution, I believe.
You are correct.
Nerd.
But more than a couple years. The French Revolution was in 1789, and this rebellion happened in 1832.
Ah.
So like 60 years later.
Just a couple years.
And they don't say it. I always thought before I read this I thought it was a student uprising like they show, but it's not. It's it was the supporters of the Republic. It was just people.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess students tend to do it.
It was very tumultuous in France in the like 100 years after the revolution.
I remember. I was there.
I was there.
So the Radio City version's got 32 actors on stage.
Wow.
And a 26-person orchestra.
Amazing.
I mean, that's just such rich music. Anyway, we could talk about Les Mis all the time. We're almost out of time to talk about all the other stuff I want to talk about. So we do have to get to some other stuff that I want to speak about. Interesting. Hadestown, do we like it?
Yes. I haven't seen it.
Who said yes?
Yeah, Pam did.
Pam, you like it?
Love it.
You haven't seen it?
Nope.
Anybody else see Hadestown? No.
No.
No, okay. I don't not like it. But I'm not a fan. I don't think it's as great as everybody thinks it is. But the good news is, starting July 24th, which, if I'm counting correctly, is in 2 days, they shot a pro shot of it. And Ruby Jewel is going, is it really 2 days?
Yes.
4 minus 2. Yes, it's true. No, I'm with you. I'm right there with you. I had to think about it. Actually, I wrote it down ahead of time. Didn't really. They did a pro shot with the original cast in London, and it is now going to be played in theaters for 5 days, starting on the 24th. And there are, if you go on to Fandango or any of these other sites, there's like 6 theaters showing it here in Austin.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going to try to go see it.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I want to see, because I saw the road show a couple of times, and fortunately for me, I've seen 3 high school productions.
Ooh.
Wow.
Don't get me started.
Neat.
Anyway, so that's cool. The other thing I want to talk, I'm going to just start talking to Mile a minute because there's things I want to talk about. This isn't even in your script,
okay.
Pam, which you've been following word for word.
Lilith's helping.
But me. I read this in the newspaper of record just moments before I got here. But Oscar Eustace, who is the executive director and artistic director of the Public Theater in New York, has been there for 21 years, is stepping down.
Ooh.
Here's a quiz. Does everybody know about the Public Theater? Does anybody not know what the Public Theater is?
I don't.
Alexander's got crinkled.
Hamilton.
Public Theater started there. Chorus Line started there. It's pretty big deal. They do Shakespeare in the Park every day. Joseph Papp started it.
Oh, wow.
When I lived in New York, they did Shakespeare in the Park, and they had a theater on South 4th Street. But now they have a whole bunch of theaters, and they're big deal. But here's an interesting thing, and I knew this actually before I read this article. Oscar Eustace is the artistic director. Guess how much his annual salary is working for this nonprofit.
35,000?
200,000.
200,000.
230,000.
I will tell you this. Like the normal rate for an artistic director in a small theater is about 90 to 100,000. Hmm. Any questions? 200,000 is not right.
My guess was
100,000. But you didn't go over. No, he makes $989,000.
Whoa. Parking is a pain.
Isn't that crazy?
Whoa.
Isn't that crazy? Anyway, okay. Well, he's stepping down. He's taken some grief. So after the pandemic, everything changed. One of the things he does say here that he talks about, and for those of us who run a nonprofit theater, is how difficult it is to run them because costs have gone way up, funding has gone way down, philanthropy has gone way down. So everything, not a good formula, but he was saying that they're having problems as well. But he said recently, he, as many other artistic directors, are getting a lot of attacks. And he said, the result is that every other artistic director my age was either forced out or quit because they couldn't take it anymore. Maybe we should get used to being criticized, but that was hard to take. I would tell him to put his big boy $1 million a year pants on and take those criticisms. Yeah.
For starters.
Which is true, because during the pandemic, or more accurately, after George Floyd was murdered, there was a big upheaval in theater in terms of how we staff, how we look at things, how mindful we are of representation. I don't know. Yeah. I do not feel sorry for him. I'm sure he's a lovely man.
He'll get over it.
Yeah. He'll get over it. Okay, good. That's all we can talk about. Letters coming. I should say that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and on the Air are not necessarily those of co-op, its board of directors, volunteers, staff, or underwriters. I have to say that. Why did I have Omarion here? Because we have a queer group here. We need to talk about Omarion.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Omarion. This is why I have it in here. Who's seen O'Mary?
I haven't seen it, but I've been keeping up with like the casting. I met Cola Scola.
I'm not familiar. Oh, I'm teasing. Go ahead.
Yeah. Cola Scola was a guest judge on King of Drag, the show that appeared on. Yeah, I was on a little reality TV show, the world's first, representing drag kings. Cola Scola was one of our judges in the finale, and seeing their whole process.
Did you get to talk to them at all?
I did. Yes, they're very sassy, very sweet. Yes, yes. But I know like Meg Statler is playing Mary right now. Jinx Monsoon has played the role. Like
Jinx Monsoon is amazing.
Yes, yes. So I love that you brought it up.
Well, I love that I did too. Well, the good news is. It is being filmed at the West End at the Trafalgar theater in the West End, starring one Cola Scola. Release date hasn't been announced, but they're going to get a pro shot of it with Cole. So
that's amazing. Well, yeah. Yes.
Very, very happy. Let's see. Is there anything else I want to talk about? I guess I do need to talk about two more things. Three more things. Four, five more things.
Ten more things.
The West End, since we're talking about the West End, so they're experimenting, or some have already done this, but they're switching their theater times. Well, let me quiz you again. This is a show about quiz. What time do theaters shows start in the United States?
8 p.m.
8 p.m.
Yeah, that's what we've always thought. Ground floor theater, my theater that I run, has switched to 7:30 p.m. I like that better. In the West End, it's been 7:30 always. That's there. 7:30 is the English 8 p.m. They're switching to 6:30. Thinking is this, because the reason why it was 8 p.m. is it gives people time to come home for work, settle in, go get dinner, and go to the theater. That's the thinking. But now, since the pandemic, so many people are working from home with flex schedules, they figured they could do it whenever they want. And since the show that they're doing, and I don't remember which one they're doing, I'll look it up here on my thing, is a 3 hour plus show, and they wanted people to get home before midnight. Mm-hmm. But how do y'all feel about a 6:30 curtain? If we were to do it here in Austin, Texas.
Really? That would be tough.
Are we talking a Saturday or a Friday?
Yeah.
Weekday.
Well, take your burlesque hat off, because I think that's a different audience. Yeah. And put your theater hat on.
These days, I don't know.
True.
Well, I think if you have an early curtain, then you could also then offer a 10 or an 11 o'clock.
Yes, yeah. You could do two shows in the night. And yeah. You could make like a happy hour maybe a part of the first showing and entice more people in.
The thing is, in Austin, traffic.
Oh, there's never traffic here. Yeah, Austin traffic. I get whenever I go to somewhere and somebody's late and they come in and says, oh my God, I got caught in traffic. I said, really? Traffic in Austin? That just doesn't seem right. Okay. This is very quick. Anybody know the show they're playing our song? Happened in the late 70s, early 80s. It was very famous with, you know it?
Yeah.
It was with Lucy Arnaz and what's his name? That, you know, that guy was in that show with that woman. There's a Spanish version of it in, oh my God, in Antonio Banderas' theater company in Spain.
Ooh.
And when we leave at the end of the show, we're going to play a song from it. We're going to play, I have to say it in Spanish. I'll say it again later. But Tocando Mi Canción. Which means they're playing our song. And then the final thing I want to talk about is Real Women Have Curves. So Real Women Have Curves, this is something I like to talk, I don't like to talk about. I talk about because Ground Floor Theater wants to do that show. It's perfect for us.
Yeah.
Are y'all familiar?
No.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, Real Women Have Curves is a play set in the Latinx community about real women. And it was just made a musical. It just closed on Broadway not too long ago.
And there was a movie with Amerigo.
And there was a movie.
Yeah. That's where I know it.
But that was not a musical. No. Anyway, so I've been checking out for rights, which have not been available. And the reason is they typically, once they leave Broadway, they hold it for bigger theaters than Ground Floor Theater. Mm-hmm. And Pasadena Playhouse is going to be the first theater company in the United States to do it after Broadway. They have not announced the casting, but it's going to play in April and May of 2027. Voila. And for those of you that don't know the show, you get to hear Oi Muchacha from Real Women Have Curves. We will be right back.
I didn't want to break your heart. The way
we are back.
Heart,
you are listening to Off Stage and on the Air with Lisa and Pam. Pam, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Hanging in there. It's crazy fun time. I'm having too good of a time.
That's because the gigawatts are here.
Yes.
It is because the gigawatts are here. We love, which always a good day. And we are going to reintroduce them for the real reason why they're here is to talk about their company. And we have Ruby Jewell.
Hello.
Who is the founder. Do you call yourself artistic director?
I don't.
Do you have
in
a title?
My head, I do.
What? In
depends,
your head?
Depends on which hat I'm wearing.
Okay.
Co-founder, typically.
All right.
Yeah.
We have Something Blue.
That's me.
Ruby Lamb.
Yes, that's me too.
And Alexander the Great.
Howdy, y'all.
And of course, we cannot forget Lilith the intern.
Woo! Hi, Lilith.
Who didn't wave this time, but they did wave. They gave the queen's wave.
Fitting.
So, 20 years. 20 years?
Yes, 20 years.
That means we've known each other for 20 years.
A little more than that.
A little more. Shut up.
It's amazing. We were both in kindergarten.
We
right?
were. Tell us about, I mean, our audience knows the gigawatts, but tell us about the gigawatts.
Which version of the gigawatts?
The one you want to tell. You're the boss.
Oh, the current version then, because let's live in the now, right? The Gigawatts, currently we have 6 members, so there are some who are not here in the studio with us today. What can I say about, I don't know, it's like such a deep question.
Okay, you could say that you do burlesque.
Yeah. Well, our full name is The Gigawatts Burlesque Review.
The review is an actual part of your name.
It is.
Because I looked up, you have a show coming up pretty soon on the 24th. 25th.
Saturday the 25th.
I have you going a day earlier. It says
please no.
It says 24th on this piece of paper. At the State Theater.
That is correct.
And when you look at your site, it says Gigawatts Burlesque Review, and I named it the Burlesque Review.
Oh.
That's what I named your show.
Our show is called The Burlap.
Yes, the
Our
one that's happening at the stage.
Well, we like to call it 20 Years of Tease.
20 Years of Tease.
You can call it that if you want to.
Well, great. So what kind of stuff do y'all do?
Well, we are known for live band burlesque. We're known for classic burlesque, which can be interpreted in a few different ways. But we like to keep the traditions of the golden age of burlesque alive, which would probably be from the 30s through the 60s. In addition to innovation and neo-burlesque and, you know, trying things out. It is a part of theater after all. So
it is indeed.
We're always pushing the envelope and you got to keep things fresh and interesting.
What is neo-burlesque?
Oh, that's a good question. neo-burlesque is a word that's been assigned to burlesque that feels a little out of the envelope of that classic gown and glove, boas and fans. So I would say like pop culture references, anything very performance art, exploratory, expansive, kind of the sky's the limit. Would you add anything to that?
Well, we have singers who are incredible. We have drag. We have lots of guest performers. Our shows are usually in two acts that are about 45 minutes each, intermission. People dress up. We have amazing themes that rotate all during the year. So, like, you'll never see the same show twice.
I'm guessing you might have some aerial work happening as well. Do you?
It depends on the venue. Uh-huh.
It's true. You couldn't do it at Ground Floor Theater.
No.
Unless you brought your own rig. We've done it.
Yes.
Alexander is our aerialist.
Yes. But I also do acrobatics on the floor. So all the sky is the limit. The ground's the limit. Yeah, whatever.
Do you do the silks or whatever they're called?
I'm known for my lyra and aerial chains, but I do the silk
lyra
hammock.
Lyra is a round hoop.
Yeah, the aerial hoop.
I like to call it a hula hoop.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's an aerial hoop. And I do pole as well. Yeah, chains, pole, silk hammock. Yeah.
Cool. So when I think of burlesque, like classic burlesque, when, you know, most of us got introduced to burlesque by watching those of us in theater the musical Gypsy.
Yes.
But we think of things that are slightly risque that I would not necessarily call like super risque or raunchy or whatever. Right. But now, I mean, burlesque is relatively popular and you have it go all over the shop, right? Different companies have different ways of doing things.
Oh,
and,
absolutely, yes. You know,
where do you guys sit in that? What's the word I'm trying to come up with? There's a word.
In that realm.
Well, going back to Queen.
I think we try to keep it. We try to walk that line and keep that balance between risque and. I don't really like to use the word tasteful. It means different things to different people, but we don't want to be super confronting, right. I guess. So we are not.
You're like the gateway drug.
I say that often. Yeah. It's weird. Yeah. Yes, I think we're accessible in a lot of ways to people who've never seen burlesque before. They're not going to be shocked and disquieted very much, and then to some. You know, there could be some more sophisticated audiences of burlesque that are looking for something that really pushes that envelope farther. And that's probably not what you're going to see at our show, but there are lots of great troupes that do all manner of things.
So are all four of you performing at the state?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So I guess the question I would have then also, so when I also think of burlesque, I think of it as not a variety show, but individual acts going through. Is that how this is laid out?
We have solos. Oh, go ahead, Blue. Oh,
I was just going to say we're going to be doing some solos. The first half of the show will be with a live band.
I find that amazing
it's
and wonderful.
Really
have you always
special.
Done that? Is that 20 years of live band?
It's been peppered in over the years. Yeah, we do it at least once a year, but usually a few times a year.
And what's the instrumentation typically?
Well, this time around, it'll be our vocalist, which is Jolie Goodnight, who's also a member of the troupe.
Yep.
And then we'll have a piano player and drums, a stand-up bass, and two horns, I believe.
Yeah, you need a trombone.
Oh, we got a horn section.
Oh, we got to have horns.
You need a trombone.
Yes. Yeah, we always make sure to ask for a mute for the horns, because the mute sounds really nasty.
Oh, you need that sleazy, greasy.
You gotta have a mute. Yeah.
Three of the gigawatts are actually going to be singing with the bands.
So. Amazing. Yeah. Are any of those three here in this room?
Yes.
I'm one of three.
Okay. Does everybody sing?
Yes.
For the most part. Okay.
Alexander says yes, so therefore that is the answer.
I think we could convince everyone to sing if we needed to. Okay.
Well, great. So you're performing at the State this week. Where do you typically perform?
Our home theater is the 29th Street Ballroom. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right north of campus.
Yeah.
Yeah, love that space. They've got the velvet curtains going inside. They keep upgrading it, and it's a really great place to perform. This is our third residency. We've been there
for a long time.
Yeah, I think.
And that used to be the Spider House Ballroom.
Before that, it was the U.S. Art Authority.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So.
And you're getting, I forgot, I read an article, the thing that's going into Chewy's, I forgot, it's...
Oh, into Trudy's. Blacks barbecue.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be Blacks. Mm-hmm. So you'll have a barbecue.
The original Blacks.
The smell of the whole block will change.
It will change. So that's amazing. So how do you feel about going into a theater like the State?
I feel very excited. Yeah. I was a part of the team that brought burlesque back to the State for the first time since Sally Rand in 2013.
Since what?
Since Sally Rand.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
It means a lot to me to be able to have our anniversary show there.
Wonderful. If folks wanted to get information about this show and the Gigawatts Burlesque Review, where would they go?
If they were interested in that, they could hop on over to our website, thejigglewattsburlesque.com, and they could find all sorts of information, like ticketing and information about us and how to see the show. It's available.
Is there anything about this upcoming performance or the Gigawatts in general, that I didn't ask you that you want people to know?
We have special guest Frankie Fictitious joining us. International award-winning entertainer. She's fantastic. I haven't had the chance, I don't think, in a while to work with her or to see her, so I'm personally very excited.
Yay. Yes. Yes, good point. And for our birthday, we brought in our own birthday present.
Oh, she's good.
I think the show is very indicative of the depth of our troupe and all of our different styles coming together, you know, in queer representation and very traditional stuff. So I think this is a fantastic introduction to both burlesque and the Gigawatts Burlesque Review.
Well, great. Well, thank you all so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Lisa.
It's great to see you again. Okay,
great to see you again, too. All right. That was Ruby Jewell, Something Blue, Ruby Lamb, and Alexander the Great, along with Lilith the intern, all of Gigawatts Burlesque Review, who has a show on the 25th at the State Theater. For more information about that show or anything Gigawatts Burlesque, you may go to thejigglewattsburlesque.com. And I resisted the urge for playing Gypsy Rose Lee, so instead, we're going to get a little Cher from the movie Burlesque.
Yes. All right.
And this is called Welcome to Burlesque. We'll be right back.
Burlesque.
I
didn't want to
break your heart. Okay, we are back. I have bad news for us. That was not the Cher. It did not make the cut somehow. So that was a song we played before. So I don't know what's going on. This is the part where we talk about local stuff going on. Well, hold on. You know what? I'm going to turn on your microphone. Say that again.
So much going on in Austin.
Exactly.
Especially for summer.
I mean,
usually.
And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time to talk about it, so we're just going to go to our list. And Pam, this is where we trade off every other one. See that list of names there?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm going to start, and then you get the next one. We'll just keep going back and forth. All right. Zach Theater's got Annie through August 2nd and Sally and Tom through August 23rd.
Yay. Hey, the stage, Austin. Fool for Love. And that's 7/10 through 8/2.
Right. Inspired Minds up in Buda's got The Wizard of Oz, and it plays through the 26th.
Tex Art has Rock of Ages through August 9th.
And Fresh Squeeze Ounce of Opera has got a show that goes to the 25th, and it is at Dada Labs.
City Theater has A Midsummer Night's Dream, the 24th through the 9th of August.
Summerstock Austin's got Cinderella, the 23rd of this month through August 19th, as well as Newsies opens July 13th through the 9th.
At McCullough.
At McCullough Auditorium. Thank you.
Hyde Park.
You said McCullough and I heard McCallum. Oh. Those are different places.
Okay, well.
But it's McCullough at UT.
Then Hyde Park Theater has brought back Feast through 7/25.
Yeah, which I want to see. I didn't get
You've
to see it the first time.
Be sure you do the dinner.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to have to. I don't think it's in the cards. Let's see. Oh, Dad Hole Productions has got the show Dad Hole. Also at Dada Labs from August 6th through the 9th.
Broad Theater with Falling Down the Mountain of Great Storms, August 14th through the 29th.
Summer Break Theater has got Midnight with a great cast they've got coming out with that. It's August 6th through the 16th.
And lastly...
Oh, and that's at the Stage Austin. Sorry.
That's all right. The Vortex. My favorite place to go to the see a show next week is the Vortex.
Thank you for adding next week. Keep going.
Summer Underground opening this Friday through the 1st of August.
Let me ask you a question about Summer Underground. Mm-hmm. Who designed the costumes for that?
Somebody really talented, I heard.
You did.
Oh, it was me?
And let me tell you something. As someone that has worked with Pam on several shows, mm-hmm. she's a wonderful designer to work with. So that's it. So I'm just going to go through the auditions myself. We have Speedrun Studios, got Little Women. Those auditions are on the 24th. Walking Shadow Shakespeare, Henry V, Part 2 on August 2nd. Filigree Theater, coming up to the very last day of auditions for their season, which is All My Sons, Bronte, and Near Nelly Bly. That last one is on the 23rd. Scottish Rite is auditioning for Judy Moody and Stink, the Mad Treasure Hunt on August 7th and 8th. And now for today in theater history, I'm going to blast through it because we're running late. We have birthdays. John Leguizamo, who I just like saying that name because I can pronounce it. Danny Glover, Alan Menken, and Adam Goodley. And this was in 2004, Stephen Sondheim's The Frogs opened. Do you know that show?
No.
Devin Finn is here. Hold on, I got to figure out which microphone you're on.
I'll be on this one.
Yeah, okay. So do you know The Frogs?
No, okay. No, I don't.
Stephen Sondheim, rarely done. It's kind of funky. I don't have time to talk about it. We're just going to go and listen to a piece of music from it. This is called The Invocation and Instructions to the Audience. We'll be right back.
Please don't cough. It tends to throw the actors off.
We are back. You are listening to Lisa and Pam on Offstage and on the Air on Co-op Radio 91.7 on your FM dial, if you have a dial. No, people don't have dials anymore.
No.
You and I remember dials.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. We're women of a certain age. Oh, no, you just did a phone dial.
Oh, yeah.
So those of you watching on the webcam saw her do the phone dial, but we're talking about this kind of dial.
I did
the radio dial. I'm talking to the webcam now. There is no webcam.
Nope. It's just me. I'm the webcam.
It's just me then.
Watching.
All right. And now we're going to introduce Devin Finn for the reason why he's here, which you really don't know. We're gonna talk. We don't know. Devin said he wanted to come on the show.
So great.
Devin had a reading of a show at my theater last night, so we can't be talking about that except in the past tense, which we will.
I heard it was good.
It was great.
Yeah, but we're going to talk everything, all things booth.
Yeah. So
we're talking about a kissing booth, right?
It could be, but probably not.
A phone booth?
The name booth?
A Shirley booth?
A Shirley booth?
Okay,
let's ask you.
Do you know who Shirley Booth was?
Hazel.
She was Hazel.
No.
You and I are old. Okay, sorry.
Seasoned.
Devin, let me allow you to speak.
I'll talk a little bit. Yeah, so Lisa let me come on the show because I wanted to talk about the booths, the family of the booths. Now, Lisa saw the show last night, so she has some inside baseball information. But Pam, you're also really smart, too, so you probably know this already. So you know, everyone knows who assassinated Abraham Lincoln, correct? It was?
John Wilkes Booth.
And what did he do for a living?
He was an actor.
He was an actor. So
he was.
Some people, that's where the knowledge kind of stops for most. But what a lot of people don't know is that he was the youngest of the most famous acting dynasty in American history at the time. Like, the most famous people in the country. I've been racking my brain for months and months trying to find a modern equivalent to, like, famous acting brothers, and the closest I can come to are the Afflecks. But, like,
no,
not
stop
even
it.
Close.
No.
Not even close. They were way better. So yeah, I'm making a movie about Edwin Booth that's based off of a play called The Brutes, which we had a reading of at Ground Floor Theater last night. Now, The Brutes is a true story about the one and only time that all three Booth brothers, John Wilkes Booth, Edwin Booth, and Junius Booth Jr., performed in a play together. They
Doesn't
did.
The sister count at all in this
You
equation?
Know, it's she Come should. She was a big champion. Yeah. She actually wrote a whole memoir after the assassination, everything, because she loved her little brother, John Wilkes. So, yeah, the family was really torn up after that. But anyway, so The Brutes is about the benefit performance of Julius Caesar that took place November 25th, 1864. And this really happened.
Yeah, we were there. I think we were sitting in the like Hazel. Fifth row.
What a show to be at. What a time travel option I would choose to go back and watch that. That would be crazy. And this is in the middle of the Civil War, or towards the end of the Civil War, obviously. And literally 5 months later, John Wilkes Booth commits the assassination. And so just the timing of all of it's crazy. And when I learned about the family behind John Wilkes Booth, my mind was blown because nobody talks about them. John Wilkes erased the history of this entire dynasty with one action.
True. And what's interesting is I think most people, theater files, would be very easy to say the name Edwin Booth.
Yes.
But they're not going to know Bruto...
Junius Brutus. Yes. So, yeah, I'm going to give the micro history of the Booth family. Junius Brutus Booth was an English actor, and he was blowing up in 1817, but he had a rival, Edmund Kean, who was the greatest Shakespearean actor in England. And they had a rival Richards. They were literally performing Richard on opposite sides of the street. And Junius didn't want the heat, so he came to America, and he blew everybody away in America. His volatile, loud, rash style of acting like took the country by storm. They loved him. Junius was a genius. He was also a raging alcoholic and a psychopath. Both of those things are what drove his entire career. And because he was like the breadwinner of the family, and he would get so drunk and so mad that he sometimes wouldn't perform, that means his family wasn't getting money. So Edwin Booth, at 12 years old, was pulled out of his childhood, pulled out of school against his will, and spent 6 years on the road with his dad, making sure that he like didn't drink, kept him at bay, kept him like in line so he would go on stage. And it was exhausting. Edwin did not want to be an actor. He was kind of forced into this legacy. And then when Junius Booth died on a riverboat in 1851, Edwin was actually blamed for it. His mom was like, "You should have been there. Why'd you leave him?" So Edwin had this tremendous guilt his whole life, carrying the weight with that of his father. And then we get to 1865. Edwin Booth, they are doing this charity performance of Julius Caesar to raise money for a statue of William Shakespeare. And that statue is there in Central Park today.
Seen it.
It is. It's great. It's cool. Literally the next night, Edwin Booth, and this is true, would start his historic 100-night run of Hamlet. He would perform Hamlet 100 nights in a row. He would set the record. And then that was it. That was the event that like cemented him as the Booth, the greatest Shakespearean actor of all time. He had finally come out of his father's shadow. And then 23 days later was April 14th, 1865. Edwin Booth would go into hiding. His whole family would receive death threats for years. And he spent the rest of his life trying to rebuild his reputation again. He spent his first half of his life trying to gain, and then he lost it and then fought to get it back.
So I can see that we have a lot to talk about here, but we only have a few more minutes.
Let's lock
left.
It in.
So
Let's
I want
lock
to talk
it in.
About, first of all, the Ides of April.
Yes.
Not lost on me. Okay. So tell me about this film and where you are in the process and what you want to do with it.
Yes. So we are in the middle of a 30-day fundraising campaign to raise funds to shoot this film. We are shooting it on August 14th and 15th at the Scottish Rite, Austin's oldest theater venue.
Am I in it?
You are not in it, okay. But you can kind of be like a shadow in
no,
the background.
Mind, no.
We won't see you. We won't hear you, but you can be there. We'll put you in the credits.
I'll be there in spirit.
You'll be in the credits regardless. Yeah, we're shooting at the Scottish Rite, as y'all know, oldest theater venue, 150-year-old painted backdrops, perfect setting. And so my short takes place the night before that 100-night run of Hamlet. And then he is visited by the ghost of his father, Junius Booth. And they essentially are having a spiritual duel of like words and Shakespeare and swords to fight for that Booth legacy.
Great. Are you directing it as well?
I am directing it.
Are you performing in it?
I am performing in it.
Who are you?
I'm Edwin Booth, and I wrote the screenplay, which is adapted from the script. So I'm wearing too many hats. I call it the Bradley Cooper treatment. That didn't work out great for him,
yeah.
But I have a great team that I'm like starting to really delegate things to. And yeah.
Amazing. So where do people go to get more information about this?
All right. If you want to know all about the Booth family and all about this film we're making, you can go to seedandspark.com and search A Vice of Kings, and that'll bring you right to our page. You can also go on our Instagram, Vice of Kings Short Film, where we're posting a bunch of videos, and all of the links are there too. And our campaign runs for 15 more days, and then we have a week, and then we go and we shoot this thing. So things are moving fast.
So if I was just to hit something in the Google to find you easily, what would I throw in there?
Seed and Spark, A Vice of Kings.
Seed and Spark.
Seed and Spark. That's the website. A Vice of Kings.
Okay.
The actual URL's got /// and a bunch of stuff. But that'll get you there. Or you can hit me up, Devin Finn, on Facebook, and we can talk personally. I will call you and tell you all this stuff you want.
Wonderful. Devin Finn, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me come on.
I got to say, I'm going to take hopefully less than 1 minute. We talked a little bit about this last night. So the term break a leg.
Yes.
There's lots of theories about a lot of these terms. But I had heard, one of the theories I had heard, that once John Wilkes Booth shot the president, he jumped off the balcony and he broke his leg.
Yes.
And that's where I was told at one point, that's where the break a leg came from.
Well, that's what they were saying Oliver Washington had afterwards.
I have a better one, though. I have a more real one.
Yeah?
So to say break a leg, so a leg, as you know, in the what is a leg in the theater?
It's the
the curtains.
The side,
it's
curtains.
The side curtains. Yeah. And when you break the leg, you open it up with your hand and you break the leg.
Oh.
I like that one better.
That's the one that I thought. There's a third one that I think is the actual truth that neither of us are mentioning, and I don't know it.
Oh, good.
And that's for another show.
That's good. That's just like whistling in the theater, which I do know. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for listening to me.
Wonderful. That was Devin Finn. He's working on his new film all about, what's the name of it?
A Vice of Kings.
Oh, A Vice of Kings. There you go. For more information, you may search for Google.
A Vice of Kings on Seed and Spark.
Seed and Spark. That's what you do. And we're going to go out with the Ballad of Booth from the show Assassins. We'll be right back.
Johnny Booth was a handsome devil. Got up in his rings and fancy silks.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air. Lisa and Pam, you having fun so far, Pam?
Loving it.
Loving it.
Yeah.
I knew you would.
You are so fun to be around. I mean, I knew that.
I'm funny looking.
No.
Yeah, it's true.
No, it's funny smelling.
Yeah. Well, when we get the Smell-O-Vision radio, we'll do that. Our next guest is Alex Garza, who is doing a performance of, it's kind of a workshop performance at Ground Floor Theater on the, hold on, I have it written down here, on the 26th, on Sunday the 26th. And I spoke to him via Zoom the other day, and we're going to listen to that. I guess I should probably cue it up first. And here it is. We'll listen to this interview. Hey, everybody. I'm lucky enough to be sitting here via Zoom with my very good friend, Alex Garza, who is bringing their show, I Know, to Ground Floor Theater for one night only. Hi, Alex. Welcome back to Offstage and On the Air.
Thanks, Lisa. Great to be here.
So you are known for doing solo shows. So I'm guessing I Know is another one of your solo shows.
Yes, it's a solo show kind of been developing for a couple of years. Really excited about this one.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, it's called I Know, and it was a title that just kind of came about several years ago when I was developing kind of like a solo show that was kind of a parody of the Spanish soap operas called the Novelas. And I created all these kind of funny characters. And there was always this exclamation by the characters when something horrible would happen. And there was this running joke of like the milk being spilt on the floor. So whenever that would happen, they would say, I know, which in Spanish is an exclamation to mean like, oh no, or oh my goodness. And it's just something, an exclamation of a heightened level.
So this is inspired by telenovelas? Does it have
It originally started of a piece that I was working on to kind of parody those telenovelas. And then over the years, it kind of started evolving into something different. This play, which is kind of a play, kind of like my play, Abuelita's Christmas Carol, that I perform during the holidays based on my grandmother's life and my family. So this one, I wanted to kind of turn it into something a little personal as well. Stories from my life, but also some fictional events kind of intermixed. And I wrote this play a few years ago called It's Headed Right Towards Us, which is about this group of high school students who were charged with saving the planet from this rock that was headed towards the Earth. And I kind of took that play and intermixed it with this play, which again is stories about my family and kind of my life as well. And it takes place in the town of Hebronville, Texas, which is a small town in South Texas, which actually exists. And that's where my family grew up, my parents grew up. And so the play takes place there, and it intermixes stories from my life as well as kind of the real conflict of the play, which is like this rock headed towards Earth, and it's headed specifically towards Hebronville, Texas. And so the town is kind of panicking. They're trying to figure out what to do. And then the military comes in and is looking for volunteers to help save, not necessarily the planet, but to help save the town, because that's where the impact is going to take place. So it's kind of an extreme story in terms of the tragedy of this kind of disaster that's going to happen, but it also intermixes a lot of comedy, but also some touching moments as well.
Got it. Wonderful. Does Abuelita make an appearance?
Yes, or kind of like a character that resembles Abuelita. It's not the Abuelita from my play, Abuelita's Christmas Carol, but there are a couple of Abuelita characters in the play. So a couple of different grandmothers, and they have their own conflicts. There's this one character named Bernardina Almendares. She's this woman in her 80s who has a podcast. She's very adventurous, but you're never sure if the stories she's telling are true or not. But she has a conflict with my grandmother in the play, and that's kind of funny as well. But they, through certain circumstances, kind of repair their relationship and come to a meeting of mine.
Wonderful.
So it's kind of touching.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, so it's touching, comic, and there's a lot of great characters in it.
Clearly, as all your shows do. So this is not a full-blown production. At what level is this? What are people going to see when they come and see this?
Well, I originally wanted to call this a stage reading, but it's going to be a little bit more than that, in that it'll be memorized, it'll be staged, but it's not going to be a full performance in the sense of like, scenery, props. I've done a couple of readings of this play here in Austin in the past, and also at a theater in Corpus Christi. So it's had some audiences before, but I've kind of developed the work since then, and I'm excited to kind of present what I have now for an audience and maybe get a little feedback or have a little small talk back at the end.
Great, wonderful. And when is this going to be performed?
This is happening Sunday, July 26th, 7 p.m. at the Ground Floor Theater.
Amazing. And where can folks go to get more information about the show?
Well, they can go to the Ground Floor Theater website, groundfloortheater.org, and they can find information about the show and more.
Wonderful. Well, Alex, thank you so much for being on Offstage and on the Air. I wish I had more time to talk, but we don't.
No, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for the time. I'm excited.
That was Alex Garza. His show, I Know, plays Ground Floor Theater on Sunday, July 26th at 7 p.m. For more information, you may visit groundfloortheater.org/box. Tell me something I don't know. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Pam.
Hey.
PFF.
Yes, PFF.
No, I never thought of that before. I never done your initials before, but those are good initials.
Yeah, Brie Larson came up with that.
Brie Larson
did. No, not Larson. Oh, come on. Comedic actress who now lives in Houston.
I don't know.
Brie, can't remember. Kathleen would
Brie
know.
Cheese.
Yeah. Well,
she's Brioche.
Brioche.
Breeze, summer breeze, makes me feel fine. Well, thank you so much for coming and playing with me.
Thank you.
Did you have fun?
You were the hostess with the mostest.
I saw your daughter last night, and she said you were a tad nervous.
Ah.
And do you know what I told her?
No.
I said, tell her not to be. She's going to be great. And indeed you were.
Oh.
Are.
Oh.
You're natural.
Well, girl.
Have you been on the radio before?
Never.
Really?
No.
Well, you're still young. Lots of time.
And getting younger.
Lots of time. Benjamin Button going backwards.
Yeah. No, this was fun.
Yeah.
And the Gigglewatts and Devin and Alex.
Yeah.
It was a good show.
Lots of activity. We always have a lot of activity here on Offstage and On the Air, but we're just about Well, we're out of time. Coming up next on Co-op is Tracy Schultz. Do you know what Tracy's going to do, Pam?
He's going to juggle monkeys.
No, he's going to tell you what's new.
Even better.
Do you know what the name of his show is?
Tracy Schultz loves you and respects you.
That's the subtitle, but it's actually titled What's New? Which is why he's going to tell you what's new.
There you go.
We will be back next week. But as promised, we're going to play a little bit from the Spanish language version of They're Playing Our Song. The title number, which is Tocando Mi Canción. And I can't remember who was singing it. So you're just going to have to look it up on your whatever that app is. We will see you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Say adios.
Adios.
Bye. La perfección que di a esta canción. Ahora...